Morning Nexus, taking teaching out on the road. I want to take you down to one of my favorite spots down by the Grand River right here in town. So just heading there now. We'll take a few minutes. Thought I'd tell you a little story. A friend of mine says to me, "Brad, you got a birthday coming up. What are you going to do with the next decade of your life?" Next decade? My goodness. I don't know what I'm having for dinner tonight. I haven't even firmed up plans for the week. You want to know what I'm going to do with the next decade of my life? I have no plans. I don't have any big vision. Not yet, anyway. I mean, for me, the reality is I don't understand, particularly in these COVID times, how anyone could have a plan for a decade of their life. If we've learned one thing from COVID, it's to keep plans tentative. I told them, "That doesn't seem like a fair question. I'm the kind of guy," I said, "who has planned for the next thing, not the next decade." But it haunted me a little, that question, because reality is this. While I don't have some big plan for the next decade of my life, I do have hopes. As humans, we always have hopes. We always have ideas and dreams, things we hope will happen. And it got me thinking, of course, about Nexus. We are standing on the cusp of another decade ourselves, turning 10 next Sunday. And while next Sunday we're going to celebrate with some stories about the past 10 years, it got me thinking about throwing this question at Nexus. What does our next decade look like? Now, we can only decide that together, but from my end, I have no strategic plan or big vision for the next decade. I don't have a flow chart or timeline. I don't have any huge plans for Nexus over the next decade, but I do have hopes. And so what I thought I would do this morning is take you down by the river and share with you five hopes that I have. Here we are by the Grand River, one of my favorite spots. I'm having some problems here. A lot of planes and ducks making noise. We'll see how it goes. But my first hope is that Nexus increasingly becomes a place of safety, refuge, and peace. You know, recently I was watching the movie The Patriot. I don't know why, but I ended up watching this movie. It's an old favorite of mine, and it's kind of absurd. It's American propaganda, the war machine, the whole thing. I mean, at the end of the movie, Mel Gibson is literally fighting the British with an American flag. He's charging at them with the flag. It's crazy. But there's this scene near the very beginning of the film that I absolutely love. You see, before the big fighting, Mel Gibson's character, he doesn't want anything to do with war. He wants to stay out of it, and yet the war comes to him. In fact, he and his family are in their house, and this one night, the battlefield ends up right in their backyard. They're watching out their windows as these two armies, the Americans and the British, collide. And they want to stay out of it, but they're watching this battle unfold, and as the sun rises the next morning, we get this glimpse of Mel Gibson's character and his family, and they're tending for the injured of both the British and the Americans. In this early scene, his house is a place of refuge, shelter, and peace where soldiers from both sides can come and find refreshment, aid. It's this beautiful portrait. Now, we're not literally in a war, but to me, all around us, it feels like we're in the middle of these scathing culture wars, constantly being asked to pick a side. We live in a time of fear, in a time of accusation and paranoia and cancellation, and we're weary and worn, not just from COVID, but from the endless cultural battles it seems happening around us. Everything has become about sides. Which side are you on? And taking sides, this gauntlet, it runs the gauntlet, of course, from like very serious things all the way down to sports and wearing masks and where we shop. And it's hard not to get sucked into this. Even just this week, I took my kids to school for 3 days. Only 3 days they went to school this week. But of course, it's this whole mayhem trying to drop kids off these days. And we've been given this memo, everyone's supposed to wear masks, even when you're dropping off your kids. And so everybody's on board. But there's one dad in the classroom. He's got a kid in the same classroom as Evie. There's one dad, and all 3 days he shows up without wearing a mask. And I keep looking at this guy, kind of giving him the stink eye. Like I'm trying to figure out to myself, is he trying to make a statement here? Is he just forgetful? Did he not get the memo? Or maybe he's wandering around going, what is going on? Why is everyone wearing masks? I have no idea. But I keep looking at him in line and I want to confront him. He's a much bigger man than I, so I haven't done that. But I keep looking at this guy, fairly certain he's on the wrong side. Even though I've never talked to the man in my entire life. And what I realize there is just looking at him, I'm kind of like, you're a problem. And this week, I realized I'm so tired of trying to understand which side people are on. Who's an enemy? Who's an ally? I'm tired of looking at people or interacting with people out of suspicion, making assumptions, usually for the worst. And these days, it feels like we're all like these hardened soldiers. We're living through this endless culture war that has left us all, I think, feeling kind of prickly, defensive, and confrontational. After watching The Patriot, Mel Gibson's front porch is like this metaphor for me. This place that cares for the injured and wounded from both sides of the battle. When I saw that, it was like, this is what church can be. That's what I hope church can be. That's what Hope Nexus can be, because I don't know about you, but I need a place of peace, of safety, of refuge. I need church to be a place where people from both sides can come and feel safe to recover from the wounds of this life. That's what I hope church can be, what Nexus can be. A place, Sunday morning should be a place where we can escape the weekly battles of life. You know, there's a reason that so many churches they have almost this password, you could say. So many churches, they begin by greeting one another, right, with the idea of the peace of Christ be with you and also with you. It's to be a place of peace. You know, as humans, I almost feel like we like to fetishize our differences. We have this fixation with polarities. And what troubled me about my observation with this dad guy in line at school is that my immediate instinct was to go to difference. And I fed on it. And I'm inclined to think we don't need more of this, especially when we come to church. What we need is a place of refuge, shelter, safety, a place where we can lay down our weapons, lay down our differences, and be with one another. We don't need more culture war Christians. I feel like that's the last thing the world or the church needs, is more Christians looking to fight. You know, the Canadian Archbishop Lazare Puhalo, he says this, when religion collapses into an ideology, it is no longer faith. Religion itself becomes lust when what you call love is motivated by hate. And listen, I'm not asking any of us to be nonpartisan in politics. I'm not asking any of us to give up on causes of justice, work that is important to our heart. I'm not asking that we set aside who we are or what we believe is important and valuable and vital in life. But what I hope for Nexus is that we can gather. When we gather, we come with humility, with grace, a willingness to set aside our differences in order to enter God's laboratory of love. Here are 150 people. Can you love just them? You know, Jad Abumrad is probably one of my favorite journalists in the world. He's the creator of Radiolab, which I happen to think is the best podcast out there. And earlier this summer, he did a show where he recounted his journey, his progression and evolution as a journalist. And as I sat listening to him explain where he had come from, where he thought he was going, it was so beautiful. He so beautifully put into words how I feel about my own calling, about my hopes for the church, our church in specific. This is what he said. I loved it. He said, as journalists, we love difference. We love to fetishize difference. But increasingly in this confusing world, we need to be the bridge between those differences. But how do you do that? I think for me now, the answer is simple. You interrogate those differences. You hold them for as long as you can until something reveals itself. The story cannot end in difference. It's got to end in revelation. I think now that is my calling, that as a journalist, as a storyteller, that every story I tell has got to find the place where the things we hold as different resolve themselves into something new. there in the car, I'm listening to this podcast as I'm driving up around Kristen's cottage. And there in the car, I pulled over when he said this because it struck such a deep chord with me. And I just sat there thinking, God, let me work for that too. That right there is what I want to be. And my hope, I think, is that Nexus can be that as well, a place where the things that we hold as different resolve themselves into something new. Second, I hope Nexus can be a place where we reclaim a sense of enchantment, awe, and wonder. You know, I had an epiphany during our season finale service last year. You see, for the first 10 years of Nexus, I've sort of seen myself as someone who could help people maybe unload some of their baggage with faith. Maybe I could help, maybe Nexus could help be a guide for people through seasons of doubt, seasons of deconstruction. And so I committed myself, right, to doing sermons where there was a certain honesty and struggle on display. Sermons, I guess you could say, where worlds and truths collided. And I sort of began to think of our community as Jacob, you know, one of the patriarchs, Jacob from the Old Testament, because Jacob, of course, wrestles with God. And that is how I've always seen Nexus, a place where you can come and wrestle with God. And like Jacob, my hope has always been that, sure, maybe we walk away with a limp after, but also a blessing. And so I sort of saw my role as helping us navigate. What does it mean to wrestle with God and faith? I think I saw myself, my job, as leading people to moments of struggle. And I hope that worked. I mean, at least some of the time. One of the most frequent things I hear about Nexus is that it's a place that allows for questioning and doubt. It's a place to wrestle with faith. In over 10 years, this sort of felt like Nexus's identity, our identity, my identity around at least what I do. But there's always been like this nagging question for me. Is wrestling in tension the only path towards authentic faith? I mean, there has to be more than just giving permission to doubt. There has to be more than just tension and struggle and wrestling. For me, it's always felt like maybe something a little bit is missing. And then I had this moment of revelation on our series finale this past year. So we're in COVID lockdown, right? It's our season finale, and I'm sitting there preparing for it, and I'm thinking to myself, what do I do? How do I make this Sunday stand out? How do I make this feel like more than just another Sunday? And then the idea hit me. I love reading nonfiction. If I'm not reading theology, it's going to be narrative nonfiction. And so my thought for that Sunday was, well, what if I just told stories? Some of my favorites. And so I did. I told you the story of a father searching for his son and about this octopus mom who broods over her eggs for over 4 years. And afterwards, right, I'm thinking, man, that was so fun. I loved every moment of it. It was the most fun I had doing a sermon in a long time. I loved creating it, delivering it. And afterwards, I couldn't stop thinking to myself that I want to do more of. And I want to do it better. But why? And the thing is that I came to realize is that these stories, they evoked a sense of enchantment, wonder, awe in me. I hope they did for you as well. Those stories, they filled me with awe. It reminded me just how extraordinary our world is. What a miracle it is to be alive and participating in this life. And so I think a part of the Nexus heartbeat will always be that we're a place of shelter, a place to ask questions and doubt, struggle, wrestle. But more and more, I'm beginning to see a new hope for my own role, a new hope for Nexus. I'm hoping and thinking, I'm beginning to see my job as leading people to moments of wonder. I want to help us re-enchant our faith, to infuse the things in life that give us meaning, those things that feel magical and wonderful and life-giving, and I want to connect those with God. I want to remind us of the magic of life and that the magic that we experience in this life is ultimately tied to God, to this divine being, the author of life, the one who we live and move and have our being in. And so I'm sensing and hoping that Nexus can not only be a place of struggle and doubt, but also a place of wonder and revelation. You know, just this week I picked up Rob Bell's new book and I ended up reading it in one entire day. I was just so enthralled with it. And the thing is, the last time I saw Rob speak, I was like, I don't know what's going on. Like, maybe Rob's kind of done or moving on from something. And I wasn't quite sure picking up this book if I would love it. But reading through its pages, I couldn't put it down, because the one thing I was struck by over and over again was his sense of awe and wonder at this world. And it drives a sort of incredible curiosity for him. And as I read the pages, I kept thinking, I want more of that for me, for us, to be overwhelmed by awe and wonder. Or I was thinking back, I don't know if you remember that debate between Bill Nye the Science Guy and Ken Ham, right? And everybody, a lot of people watched this debate between creation and evolution, and of course nobody changed their mind because you ended up believing what you already believed when you watched it. But one of the things I was struck by, and one of the reasons why I feel like Bill Nye just owned that debate, is between the two, you know, Ken Ham, he just felt the whole time stiff and too serious. But the way that Bill Nye interacted, it was just, he was so full of curiosity. He marveled at the history of our universe and our planet, and he was just so much more convincing because you could tell there was a reverence, an awe, a sense of wonder. My hope for Nexus is that we would fully inhabit the role of Jacob. Yes, Jacob wrestles with God, but he has another experience as well. It's a powerful one. He wakes up, eyes wide open, and declares in awe and reverence, wow, God is in this place, and I did not know it. Third, I hope that Nexus can embrace being both conservative and progressive. Now, no doubt that's going to freak some of us out. It's like, uh-oh, what do you mean by that? Well, first of all, let me make a distinction at least around conservative. When I say conservative, I'm not talking about the faux conservative ism of today's fundamentalism. It's a sham and it's a complete masquerade. What we're seeing in many conservative circles today, especially religious ones, isn't conservative at all. It is, to be quite honest, in my mind, it's heretical. I came across a quote this week from David Bentley Hart that I thought was incredibly telling. He says this, "Contrary to conventional wisdom, Christianity has never really taken deep root in America or had any success in forming American consciousness. In its place, we have invented a kind of mystery religion of personal liberation sustained by a cult of mammon." What we are seeing in a lot of conservative circles, especially fundamentalist ones, it isn't Christianity at all. It is, as Hart says, it's kind of some weird mystery religion. So that is not what I'm talking about at all. What I'm talking about is true conservatism. One that draws upon the rich tradition of our faith, a tradition that reminds us of the wisdom of our ancient faith and that it's worth holding on to. It's as Brian Zahn reminds us, Christianity is a received faith. We don't get to make it up. Christianity remains a living faith while it remains rooted in its ancient soil. That is worth holding on to. We receive the Christian path as a gift. And you know, there's this passage in Matthew where Jesus, he's trying to describe what his kingdom is all about, what that looks like. And he says to his followers this, "Every teacher of the law who has become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house who brings out of his storeroom new treasures as well as old." The Christian path is always at its best when it's both new and old. I remember one time being at Warren and Jenny's house for their end of year festival that we often have at Nexus. And I remember this one night where we're there and it's getting late and Warren heads down to his wine cellar and he comes back up with an old bottle of wine. Like, this thing's, I think, at least 20 years old, and he's gonna share it with us. And I remember talking to him, we were looking at the wine, everyone's getting excited to taste it, and I said to Warren, "How would you describe this wine?" And he said to us, "Elegant." That's all he said. One word, elegant. And my, oh my, was it ever. It was delicious. It was elegant. It was mature and sophisticated. It was truly a treasure. As with wine, so with faith. There's a certain maturity and sophistication with wine that can only come from aging. A 2019 wine simply can't compare because it hasn't had the time to age and mature. And it's the same with faith. We still cling to the old, to our traditions, to our faith that's been passed down to us because there's a certain level of maturity, sophistication, elegance that can only come from something that's had time to age. At the same time, Jesus says there are both old and new treasures in his kingdom, which is why I hope we can embrace a progressive faith as well. You see, the Christian faith to me is like this ongoing conversation, and not all that needs to be said has already been said. The Christian path is one that has not yet been fully explored or discovered. You know, in Jesus' farewell words to his disciples in the upper room, right before his death, he tells them this: I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. But when the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all truth. I believe that Spirit is still guiding, still showing us, still leading us forward. And we won't fully arrive, just like those before us never fully arrived. But the last word on faith has not been said. The journey is ongoing. And so my hope for Nexus is that we can be a community that's always drinking from the old and elegant wines of our faith, even as we continually look and search for the new and the fresh. Fourth, I hope Nexus is and remains a place of spiritual growth where people continually learn to love and follow Jesus. You know, last week I talked about Jesus' words about finding rest in him, but directly before he says that, there's this fascinating line that he speaks in Matthew 11. He says this: all things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. I think Jesus is saying something rather startling here. No one, Jesus says, knows God. Not you, not me, not the great philosophers or theologians of the ages. No one. No one knows God except Jesus and those Jesus chooses to reveal God to. And of course, what Jesus would do over the course of his life is he would reveal God to all of us. And so Jesus reveals God. And this is the thing to me. We don't start with God and work our way to Jesus as in, hey, we know what God is like, so Jesus must be that as well. No, if we work that approach, we'll get everything wrong. We start with Jesus and conclude whatever Jesus is like, God is like that as well. You know, Brian Zahn has this little mantra that he has his people at his church say, and it goes like this: God is like Jesus. God has always been like Jesus. There has never been a time when God wasn't like Jesus. We didn't always know that, but now we do. On the Christian path, our understanding of God is entirely informed by Jesus. It's Jesus who gives definition to God, not the other way around. And so whatever we might want to say or think about God, it's got to submit and yield to what we know of Jesus. And when people say things to me like, I don't want to believe in a God who wants to punish people and send people to hell, or I don't believe in a God who hates gay people, or a God that has too many rules, I don't want a God that's grumpy and angry all the time, you know, I think to myself, I don't believe in that God either, because the God I believe in looks like Jesus. And when we are constantly taking our cues from Jesus, then a community following that will always be marked by love and personal growth. True community, church at its best, is about love, which sounds cliche, I know that, but listen to the words of what I think is one of the best definitions of love. It's from M. Scott Peck. He says this: love is the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. Love is about spiritual growth. Church is about spiritual growth. To be authentic community means we're going to grow. I was talking to a friend of mine about 2 weeks ago, and he's now going to AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, whatever you might think about AA and its methodology, one of the things I appreciate most about AA is that people are real about the fact that they need to change and grow and be transformed. There are plenty of reasons to connect with a church, but at its core, my hope is that for all of us, the root desire in being here at Nexus is that we want to grow. Because when I look at Jesus and his interaction with others in the Gospels, I think in some way, he was always asking everyone essentially the same question. And it's the same question I think he's still asking of us today. Are you willing to grow? Are you willing to change? To be changed and transformed? You know, if even half of us at Nexus aren't willing to be changed, if we're not willing to grow, if we're not open to that, then I'm not sure what we're doing. And so my ongoing hope for Nexus is that we are and remain a place of spiritual growth where people continually learn to love and follow Jesus. And that following will always take us to a place of growth and change. Question is, can we lean into that, embrace it? I hope we can. Fifth and finally, I hope Nexus always remains good company to travel with. You know, I heard a story recently that I absolutely love. So there's two characters and they're walking down a path and the one traveler says to the other, which is more important when traveling, the journey or the destination? And the other traveler pauses for a moment and then he says, neither. The company is most important. I love it. You know, there's something innate in us as humans. We don't want to journey alone. We're hardwired to travel through life with others. And of course, we don't want to travel with just anyone. We want good company to travel with. You know, I did a sermon recently with my brother and we were reflecting on the demise of the church and why church so often doesn't appeal to people. And we were wondering together if maybe a part of that is simply because so many churches just aren't good company to travel with. Maybe people don't go to church because they don't find people there that they want to journey through life with. I mean, I jest about my friend Riley all the time, some of the quirks he has and how it annoys me while traveling. That's always going to happen with people. But the reality is, he's good company to travel with. That's why I like traveling with him. Or this summer, I took a quick 3-day fishing trip with two friends. We went up to Sault Ste. Marie. And here's the weird thing. I wouldn't say fishing is exactly a passion of mine. And I wasn't exactly excited about traveling 10 hours to Sault Ste. Marie and back. It felt like a lot. So why did I go? Well, because I enjoy these people's company. You know, the thing is, we got there, I caught zero fish. We're on a fishing trip and I caught zero fish. And yet, I didn't care. Because the reality is, I didn't really care where we went or what we did. The most important thing wasn't the journey. It wasn't the destination. The point was the company. And here's the thing that I wish more churches understood and what I hope we can maintain here at Nexus. Jesus was good company. People loved being around Jesus. They were clearly attracted to him because he was good company. He was clearly a lot of fun. I mean, he must have been. Anyone who insists on keeping the party going by miraculously providing more wine has to be fun to be around. And I mean, even people who didn't like him seemed to be drawn to him. They wanted to have dinner, eat with him. Something about Jesus' company was compelling and profound. And so this question has been on my mind. What does it mean for us as churches to be good company for people to travel through life with? And you know, I'm not quite sure of the answer, but what I've come to think is this. I think the churches that are going to make it through this whole COVID thing, I think they're going to be the ones who are good company with one another. Churches who know how to do relationships well. Because the journey and the destination are of course important, but perhaps even more important is the company. You know, Stanley Hauerwas once said this, "The work of Jesus was not a new set of ideals or principles for reforming or even revolutionizing society, but the establishment of a new community, a people that embodied forgiveness, sharing, and self-sacrificial love in its ritual and discipline. In that sense, the visible church is not to be the bearer of Christ's message. The church is to be the message. To do that, we're going to need to be a good company of people to travel with. And my hope is that Nexus remains that well into the future. And so as I think about the possibility of another decade doing this together, traveling together, these are my five hopes for Nexus. In the meantime, go in peace.